In part two with Phylene's Tale of Nouns, we continue to talk about fallout from coronavirus, the effects on consumers' lives, all based on Phylene's latest research. And in this part in particular, we compare the situation that we're experiencing right now to the Great Depression, to the Spanish flu epidemic or pandemic of 1918, and a whole lot more. Another compelling talk with Phylene's Tale of Nouns, so check it out. That's what I was. I was going to ask you about that. It's like, I mean, how does this compare to the Great Depression? Because I mean, I was thinking about that early on. I was like, oh my! I was thinking about the Spanish flu back in what 1918 or something like that. And then I thought about the Great Depression. Like, holy smokes! This is, you know, 100 years removed from that, and here we are back again. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it you know, in terms of the scale of the impact and the depth of the recession, I think it does compare to the Great Depression, or it will, us looking back, it will compare to the Great Depression. I mean, it's always speculative from this moment. We're in the middle of it. We're in the eye of the storm.
Yeah.
And so it's sometimes hard to grasp. And I don't necessarily want to sow panic, right? Like the point here is not to get people to react, but to get people to prepare for what we might look back on, right?
Yeah.
And see. In other ways, it's different. So the obvious difference is that the rapidity, right, with which the recession has come on, right, and the depth and intensity of that recession, you know, that's new. That's different. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it happened really, really fast.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you see that most obviously. These are, you know, charts that people circulate all over. You see that most obviously in unemployment claims. Information mm-hmm. where you see spikes of unemployment claims in really short periods of time, unlike anything we've seen since we've started recording that information.
Yeah.
And we know that unemployment claims really undercounts the extent of the unemployment crisis, you know, and in terms of, you know, the kinds of pay cuts that people are facing and uncertainty more broadly mm-hmm. that people are facing. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the sense of how quickly it's happened, it's different, you know, than past downturns. I would also say that really it's a unique situation. Generally, it's a different kind of recession. And it's different in at least two ways. Like one, it's hitting the services sector in a way that past, you know, this is not a recession that originated in the financial services sector,
yeah.
right? So it's not like 2008, 2009.
Oh, no.
It's really different. And so it's hitting service workers and it's hitting small and local businesses the hardest, mm. right? So that's just different. It's going to be the first service sector led recession in US history, mm-hmm. I think. The second thing is that, you know, in addition to it being a service sector recession, it's really not like a business cycle downturn, right? Like it's not one of these, you know, kind of typical, you know, kind of ebbs and flows of the business cycle. Mm-hmm. We have to put the economy into recession. We have to kind of put the economy into hibernation in order to be able to protect ourselves from the public health crisis that is the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
So it's a recession by necessity as a result of the public health needs, mm-hmm. you know, and so that is also very different. It's really hard to grasp, to sort of grapple with, right? Because we have to assume the economic damage in order to avoid much greater public health damage.
Correct. Yeah.
So it's a difficult trade-off, I think, for sometimes people to wrap their minds around, because you can see the economic damage. Mm-hmm. What you can't see is the counterfactual, which is the number of lives saved through social distancing,
no doubt.
Through quarantine,
yep.
you know, through the broader shutdown. So, you know, I think that that's something that people really need to keep top of mind, right, as they look at the impacts on their business and look at the impacts on the broader economy is, mm-hmm. you know, what's the trade-off? And I think that there's already some pretty clear evidence that the shutdown, while is taking a dramatic toll on the economy, will have positive impacts, not just in terms of lives saved, and that's the big thing, right? Mm-hmm. Lives saved, right? Every life saved. But also, there's going to be positive economic impacts, right? And we actually have evidence from the 1918. You mentioned the 1918 influenza epidemic. Mm-hmm. We have good evidence that the cities that more aggressively took on social distancing measures and took them on sooner actually saw positive economic impacts
really
earlier and for a longer time than those cities that tried to stay open. for the, you know, to benefit the economy. So actually we know that that social distancing actually will, it's not an either or, right? Mm-hmm. Like we really have to do this
right.
in order to both preserve, save lives and to preserve economic stability in the medium and long term. Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense because of what's happening in South Korea. I mean, the countries that are literally reopening right now, those are the ones that really took this really seriously, like South Korea, yeah. obviously, Italy, I'm trying to think of some other, New Zealand, Australia,
yep.
you know, they're really coming back, it sounds like. I mean, just based on the things that I have read. So, I mean, what you said there, like, that just rings true.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So the question is not whether or not we should be, you know, quarantining, you know, we should be shutting down the economy in order to tackle the public health crisis. It's not whether or not, but what can we do in the meantime mm-hmm. to support credit union members, to support consumers, to support businesses, right?
Right,
so that we can weather the storm.
So, and I've also heard that the hardest, I guess the hardest group that this has hit are the millennials because of those service-oriented jobs, because that's where most of them are right now. And they're kind of in the beginnings of their careers or yep. getting to that second chapter in their career. And so, unfortunately, those are kind of the jobs that were eliminated right away or put on furlough or
yeah.
You know, so
really, I think that there's two other big lessons that we learned and writing this report. Like the first is, and it links up with this question about the impacts on young people.
Yeah.
So the first is that what we're seeing is not a new set of financial challenges. What we're seeing is the revealing and exacerbation of existing financial challenges, right?
Mm-hmm.
While, you know, pre-coronavirus, right, the economy was growing, unemployment was technically very low, but we also knew that there was a massive amount of fragility and vulnerability on, you know, for household balance sheets, household finances. We knew that there was growing work insecurity. We knew that there were stagnant wages. We knew that people probably weren't saving enough in aggregate. Really high levels of debt. That's not always a bad thing, you know, just to be clear, but sometimes can become unsustainable and difficult for people.
Right.
And a really difficult problem around the risks of kind of economic activity, especially insurance, right? We knew that mm-hmm. insurance and paid sick leave, these were all problems before the pandemic and the shutdown have really revealed them to be the problems that they were before and then exacerbated their mm-hmm. impacts on people. So that's one thing, right? Is that we've really learned that, you know, we need to be taking care of people in a much more, you know, expansive and rigorous way, even in good times, and you know, when the economy looks strong,
yeah.
In order to, you know, when these kinds of crises happen, to take the sharp edge right out of the downturn.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing, I've already mentioned this, and you just brought it up, is that this is really having disparate impacts on particular populations, right? Not everybody is having the same exposure to the virus itself. Not all groups are being infected or, you know, honestly dying at the same rates as other groups.
Mm-hmm.
And the economic impacts are similarly unequal.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about it, yeah.
So, you know, we know that service workers are getting hit, you know, the strongest. And what we know about the service sector is that, as you said, there are particular populations that are overrepresented there, right? Young people, mm-hmm. women, and people of color in
yep.
particular.
Yeah.
So those are the groups, right, that we think are being, that we can see already in some of the early indicators that are being hit really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Alongside, you know, working families, people who are dealing without childcare, trying to balance that challenge,
imagine.
Right?
Man.
And then, you know, the other two groups that we identify in this report that are really have special needs here are survivors of domestic violence, and we've seen really powerful spikes in abuse of all kinds, but especially domestic violence,
yeah.
and people who don't have good access to quality internet, and the digital divide, the divide between those who have high speed broadband mm-hmm. and those who don't mm-hmm. is being, again, revealed and exacerbated here. And mm-hmm. I think that we can see what a critical public good in good internet really is, right?
Yeah, right.
In this day and age, right? And I think going forward, and we can maybe talk a little bit about this too, with the kind of evolution of service delivery, as we kind of are all kind of pushed really far along that kind of digital transformation curve, it's going to be absolutely critical that everybody has, access to good quality internet.
Yeah, no doubt. And-